Chapter 4. Secrets. The seasons passed, and each day Jo diligently wrote her stories down. She happily scribbled away until the last page was filled. Finally, having finished her new manuscript, she signed her name and tied it up with a red ribbon. Jo then took another manuscript out of her desk drawer and put them both in her bag. She then crept downstairs, put on her hat and coat as quietly as possible, and left the March house. She didn't want anyone to know that she was giving her manuscripts to the newspaper in the hopes that one or both would be printed. Once in town, and after having delivered her stories to the newspaper, Jo happened to run into Lori. He was leaving a saloon where he had been playing billiards. They briefly chatted, and then Jo asked, "Do you go to the saloon often?" "Not often," replied Lori. "I wish you wouldn't. It's a waste of time and money, and you'll turn into an awful boy. I hope you stay respectable," said Jo, shaking her head. "Can't a fellow enjoy a little amusement now and then without losing his social acceptance?" asked Lori, looking angry. "Just be a simple, honest, respectable boy, and we'll never desert you," said Jo. They walked in silence for a few minutes. "Are you going to deliver lectures all the way home?" he then asked. "Of course not. Why?" "Because if you're not, I'd like to walk with you and tell you something very interesting," said Lori. "I won't bother you anymore," said Jo. "I'd very much like to hear your news." "Very well, I'll tell you my secret, but then you must tell me what you were doing in town all by yourself." "I don't have any secrets," began Jo, but stopped suddenly, remembering that she had. "You can't hide anything," exclaimed Lori. "So explain, or I won't tell you what I know." Jo thought about it for a moment and then said, "Well, I've left two stories with an editor at the newspaper, and he's going to tell me next week if they'll be printed." "Hooray for Miss March, the celebrated American author," cried Lori. "Hush! It won't come to anything, I'm sure," Jo said. "I didn't tell anyone else about it because I didn't want them to be disappointed if the stories don't get printed." "Why, Jo, your stories are works of Shakespeare compared to half the rubbish published every day. Won't it be fun to see them in print?" Jo's eyes sparkled, for it was always pleasant to be believed in. "Okay, I've told you my secret. Now what's yours?" asked Jo. "I might get into trouble for telling you," began Lori, "but guess who my tutor, Mr. Brooke, has his eye on?"
"I don't know. Tell me," cried Jo.
"Your lovely sister Meg." Jo must have shown shock and displeasure on her face, for Lori then said, "I thought you'd be pleased." "At the idea of anybody coming to take Meg away? No, thank you. I don't think secrets agree with me," said Jo, frowning. For a week or two after this meeting with Lori, Jo behaved very strangely. She was rude to Mr. Brooke whenever they met, would sit looking at Meg with a sad face, and would occasionally hug and kiss her sister for no reason. Meg, of course, noticed Jo's odd behavior, but she didn't ask her sister about it. She assumed Jo was just being herself, which was often very different from her other sisters. One Saturday, Meg was sitting in the window seat sewing when she noticed Jo outside running around with Lori. Loud laughter was heard, followed by murmured voices, and then there was the sound of newspapers flapping. "What shall we do with that girl?" Meg asked her sisters. "She will never behave like a young lady."
"I hope she won't," said Beth. "She is so funny and dear the way she is."
In a few minutes, Jo came into the room, lay down on the sofa, and pretended to read the newspaper.
"Is there anything interesting in there?" Meg asked.
"Nothing but a story," Jo replied, carefully keeping the name of the paper out of sight.
"You should read it out loud. It will amuse us and keep you out of trouble," said Amy in her most grown-up voice. Jo began to read the story, and the girls listened with interest. When Jo was finished, Beth asked her who wrote it. Jo suddenly sat up,
cast away the paper, and in a loud voice said, "Your sister!"
"You?" cried Meg. "It's very good," said Amy.
"I knew it, I knew it! Oh, Joe, I'm so proud of you," said Beth, and ran to give her sister a hug.
The girls then proceeded to ask Joe 100 questions about how this all came about.
"Stop talking, girls, and I'll tell you everything," said Joe.
Joe then explained everything, and at last she let a few tears fall, for she was overjoyed to earn the praise of those she loved, and she thought this seemed to be the first step toward a happy end. Sadly, the happy days in the March house did not last. It was November, and as the girls sat together in the parlor, they groaned about the bitter weather. Their moods, however, brightened when they saw their mother coming up the path toward home and Laurie approaching from his house next door. After all had welcomed each other, Mrs. March asked if the mail had come yet. It seemed that their regular letters from the girl's father were late. Just as Mrs. March was inquiring about the late post, Hannah entered the room with a letter. "It's one of those horrible telegrams," said Hannah, giving it to Mrs. March. Mrs. March took the telegram, read the few lines quickly, and sat back in her chair, white as a ghost. Joe then took the telegram and read it out loud for everyone to hear. "Mrs. March, your husband is very ill. Come at once. S. Hale, Blank Hospital, Washington." The girls quickly gathered around their mother. For several minutes, there was nothing but the sound of sobbing in the room. Hannah was the first to break the silence, suggesting that Mrs. March get her things ready for her trip to see her husband. "She's right," said Mrs. March. "There's no time for tears now." She then gave the girls orders to get things ready for her journey, and a moment later, everyone scattered to fulfill their duties to their mother. Even Laurie ran off to do whatever he could to help the March family, for they were very special to him and he to them. The afternoon quickly passed, and all the errands were done. Mr. Brooke had come by the house after hearing the news and offered to escort Mrs. March to Washington. All seemed to now be in order for Mrs. March's departure, but Joe was missing. Everyone began to get anxious, and Laurie went off to find her. Joe soon arrived back at the March house and gave her mother a roll of banknotes. She said, "This is my contribution toward making Father comfortable and bringing him home." $25, cried Mrs. March. "Joe, I hope you haven't done anything rash." "I didn't beg, borrow, or steal for it," replied Joe. "I only sold what was my own." As Joe spoke, she took off her hood, and everyone gave a cry, for all of her abundant hair was cut short. "Joe, your hair! Your beautiful hair! My dear girl, there was no need for this," said Mrs. March. Joe dismissed everyone's exclamations about her hair and said, "I'm satisfied, so please take the money." That night, Mrs. March sent everyone to bed at 10 o'clock. "Go to bed and don't talk, for we must be up early. Good night, my darlings," said Mrs. March. The girls kissed their mother and went to bed silently. Beth and Amy soon fell asleep in spite of their heavy hearts, but Meg lay awake thinking about her poor father. Joe was also awake, and when Meg heard her crying, she said, "Joe, dear, what is it? Are you crying about father?"
"No, not now," Joe replied.
"What then?"
"My hair!"
burst out poor Joe, trying to hide her tears in her pillow.